Echo from the ages.
Early doctors tried to scare off possessing demons or sicknesses by assuming terrifying masks, covering themselves with skins of animals, shouting, raving, slapping their hands, shaking rattles, and even sucking out the demon through a hollow tube. An old adage says, nature cures the disease, while the remedy amuses the patient.
This statement comes from a chapter by historian Will Durant on the origin of medicine and medical practices.
This is Face to the Future, a new transcribed series on this station produced in cooperation with the North American Air Defense Command. Its conductor is Del Vina, well-known broadcaster, author, lecturer, a lady of adventure as well. It's Face to the Future. And here is our hostess, Del Vina.
Welcome again to Face to the Future. Some years ago, when Madeline Carroll was a reigning queen of Hollywood, she was making a personal appearance in New York. As a part of her schedule, she visited the Columbia University School of Journalism, where she was the main feature of a press conference to be carried out by the embryo newspapermen. One of them posed the usual college boy question. "Miss Carroll," he asked, "if you were going to be shipwrecked on a desert island with a man, what kind of a man would you choose?" Madeline's answer was quick and sure. "Who," she asked in return, "but an obstetrician." Even as a desert island might have its requirements for medical specialization, then similar hard and realistic facts face us today which will want medical specialization for their solution. One of the small headlines which attracted great interest in 1960 was,
"In Los Angeles today, the president-elect of the American Medical Association predicted a race of superhuman beings who can expect to live 125 years or more. His name, Dr. Vincent Askey. He said, it is conceivable that couples 90 years old will still be having babies, and that within the next 25 years, man will know how to depress harmful heredity characteristics through control of cell chemistry."
One of the most interesting medical capitals in the world is the Aerospace Medical Center, the School of Aviation Medicine at Brooks Air Force Base near San Antonio, Texas. Where once it concerned itself with the peculiar stresses on men in flight in the atmosphere, it has for years been edging man's foot over the threshold and into space by a theory, experiment, tying vision to practicality. Those famous monkeys named Sam, who made space flights, didn't come by that common name by accident. S is for school, A for aviation, and M for medicine. On the successes of monkey and other animal flights are built the data and experience factors which will pave the way for the astronauts into space flights. As I talk, you hear the heartbeat of one of the astronauts as he is being prepared to simulate the gravity pressures of 10 times the Earth's gravity pull in a man-made whirling merry-go-round called a centrifuge in Johnstown, Pennsylvania.
We are going to carry out a simulation of the launch phase. You will report televite panels and altitude on the way out, and then G versus time of the exit phase.
Roger. Understand.
You'll then hold until you get the start retro sequence light come about and get into the retro fire position. You'll hold this position until you get in retro attitude light, at which time you will fire your retro rockets. This will decelerate you and bring you down out of orbit.
And besides the astronaut, there are instructions to an intent observer, the medical officer.
Will the medical officer please operate his IC stop button?
It operates.
File, will you push and release your IC stop button?
It operates.
Now he talks to the astronaut.
Would you take a deep breath, please? All right. Exhale. All right, take a breath and strain. The purpose of this was to calibrate the medical officer's breathing apparatus over where he was recording this breathing. The strain technique is used to increase the G tolerance.
When all observers, including the medical officer, are satisfied, the launch is ready.
All right, go ahead with the countdown procedure, Vic.
We are ready to fire. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, fire.
Launch oxygen light on.
The pilot is reporting the completion of the automatic procedures as they occur, and now displayed on his
camera. That's through 30,000 feet.
Before a man could safely do all this, and so matter-of-factly, animal heartbeats experienced the pressures first. This is the heartbeat of a mouse. One of the space medicine elder statesmen is a German-born enthusiast and philosopher in this field. He has done much to chart the way of the Aerospace Medical Center. He's my next guest. Will you identify yourself, please?
I am Dr. Hubertus Struckholt, advisor for research to the commander of the Aerospace Medical Center at Brooksfield, Texas.
While a great deal of future in flight belongs to engineers in providing vehicles and power, what are the areas in which medicine is interesting itself in behalf of men in space?
First, we are interested in the environment of space itself. That means a space between the various celestial bodies. The space between the Earth and Moon, or the Earth and the neighboring planets, Venus and Mars. From the medical point of view, space begins at about 12 miles. Secondly, we are especially interested in the differences and variations in various parts of the space environment. The existence of a great radiation belt.
Is the job of getting a man in space one of his comfort or preservation of his health?
I would say both. We are concerned in his health, that he does not suffer any hazards or injuries from the external environment of space. But on the other hand, we are also very much concerned in his comfort. You should be as comfortable as possible.
If it's now possible for us to place a man in a very isolated condition at the Arctic dew line stations for the North American Air Defense Command, will it be possible for us to similarly isolate a man in a patrolling space vehicle in the future without physiological or psychological complications?
I do not think that in a space vehicle the isolation is so complete as, for instance, in the Arctic. He sees a wonderful visual panorama, so there is something to see in space, so that the isolation is not the same as in the Arctic.
Is there a medical aspect to this isolation?
This is a very important problem, isolation, especially over longer periods of time. And because of this, we probably must demand, from a medical point of view, that space technology does something to shorten the time of space operations, the duration of space operations, for instance, concerning a trip to one of the neighboring planets.
Have you any way of knowing whether the Russians are engaged in similar studies of medicine?
Yes, they have several institutions in Moscow, in Kiev, in which they study the space component in aviation medicine. And then they have also some institutions in which they study astrobiology, a field which is concerned with the possibility of life on other celestial bodies.
Undoubtedly, space medicine has already had a big influence on all medical thinking. If it could be military experiments, which led to the defeat of the killing power of yellow fever, then it's probable that space medicine may pave a path to some of the cures which have so far eluded men. Dr. Strugel, what do you see as the medical implications of the year 2000?
This extraterrestrial trend in medical thinking will have a great influence upon medicine in general and upon our whole life. Instrumentation will be different and will be very strongly influenced by the development in astronautics and bioastronautics or space medicine. Everything is based on miniaturization in volume and minimization in weight. This will have some effect upon the medical instrumentation in hospitals. It might be possible in some years that hospitals and physicians can use communication satellites for communication between one hospital and the other about a certain patient. So there will be a great influence.
So, as medicine was once the realm of the witch doctor, it is now progressing into exotic and bewitching fields as broad as the universe itself. The missile which will one day put man in his first orbit has about 300,000 inanimate parts. Even more complicated man, who will do the orbiting and ultimately space exploration, has to be understood better. He must be better protected for health and life than the machine refinements to both put him there and, equally as important, bring him back to tell about it.
This has been Face to the Future, a transcribed series on this station produced in cooperation with the North American Air Defense Command and featuring Delvina with her parade of interesting guests. Be with us next time as we put our face to the future.